Well, good morning. Good morning. How is everyone doing today?
Good.
Good. All three of you, thank you for saying good. Oh, well, I'm glad you're here today, and I'm also glad if you're listening on our podcast, I'm glad you could join us digitally, and we appreciate that. We are continuing in our Nehemiah series. Each week we tackle a chapter. There might come a day where we do half a chapter, but right now we are doing one chapter each Sunday. And this week is Nehemiah chapter 6, so if you have your Bible, go ahead and open up. We're in Nehemiah chapter 6 the entire time. There is one verse outside of Nehemiah 6, but it'll be on the screen, and if you're a fast flipper, you can get there too. Today's message title is On Guard, Not in Grande, if anyone is thinking about coffee right now. John Jackson totally got that. On Guard. Everyone say On Guard. On guard.
Oh, okay.
I was wondering. I was like, am I already done? Is my time out? On guard. Hey, did anyone watch Olympics fencing? Did anyone see the fencing? Couple people? Yes. There. Two people. Me. I saw. Okay. Did anyone watch Miles Chamley? Like, wow. The Olympics really stirred up a lot of conversation. Miles Chamley Watson, he was probably one of my favorite Olympians to watch. Michael Phelps and Miles were a couple of my absolute favorites. He's a younger guy on the U.S. team, and how he fences, it's said that he's revolutionizing fencing altogether because he has these like giant arms that can like, it's like Gumby, wrap around. So one of the things in fencing, if you didn't know, you have to face your opponent at all times, and if you turn, you lose a point. Like, that's the same as if you get stabbed with the foil or the knife or whatever it's called. And so what he'll do is he'll get in a preparation, and he has his arm out, he has the foil, he's defending, blocking, whatever, and then he has an arm so long that he goes like this behind his back, and they can't guard it, and he gets them. That's how he gets his point. Or he goes above his head or below his legs. And so people are like, is that cheating? And they're like, he got you. And so he made it onto the Olympic team because he kept outsmarting all these opponents. And he actually ended up getting bronze in the world because of these moves. It's changing how people fence. And I was thinking about fencing in regards to Nehemiah chapter 6. There are three primary, what's it called? Three primary things about fencing. You have the stance is so key and important. Because if you're off balance, you're not going to be very good at attacking or defending, right? You have to be really set into stance right. The other thing is your torso, right? That's how you score the points. That's how you get someone out. That's how you win or lose is based off your torso. And the other one, of course, is the foil. Because if you don't have a weapon to engage with, you're just going to be standing there getting poked, right? It's key to have a foil. The foil is your attacking and defending. That's the only way you can block someone. And so in Nehemiah chapter 6, there are three breakdowns in the chapter today that represent these three characteristics. So with your notes, I'll let you know when that happens and write it in. So jumping in Nehemiah chapter 6, verse 1, starting off today, hit on the screen, you're ahead of me, that's great. Sanballat and Tobiah, Geshem the Arab, and the rest of our enemies found out that I had finished rebuilding the wall and that no gaps remained. Though we had not yet set up the doors in the gate, so Sanballat and Geshem sent a message asking me to meet them at one of the villages in the plain of Ono. You know, if your enemy is like, can you meet me at the place called Ono? Like, that's a first indicator that you shouldn't go there, right? Oh, no. It's in the name. But I realized they were plotting to harm me, so I replied by sending this message to them. I am engaged in a great work, so I can't come. Why should I stop working to come and meet with you? It's a great response. First point today, if you're taking notes, and I hope that you would, it's in your bulletin. If you don't have a bulletin, you can raise your hand, and David would kindly give you a bulletin. Are we out? No? Yes? You just gave me that look. You'll find some. So you can write in the bulletin. First point is health. Health. It is obvious that these enemies were after Nehemiah's health. They tried to lure him to the location of, oh no, to hurt him, injure him, and possibly kill him. First point in being on guard against the enemy is you got to watch your health. You got to watch your health. The enemy is after your health. Your health. This is really representative of the stance in fencing. Do you know the stance? They practice hours. If you want to be in the Olympics, you have to practice hours a day, not just hours a year, right? There's a different practice level than high school baseball versus professional baseball. You know what I mean? So the stance, I was watching this YouTube documentary, and he was saying that it all comes down to from the feet all the way up to the head. You have to be so specific in what you do in the stance. You have to make sure your weight is perfectly centered on both feet, which is perfectly centered on the ball of your feet and the heel. So everything has to be in balance. Because if you're back heavy, you might be really good at scooting back, but it's hard to get going forward. They'll see that you're coming. You have to be perfectly balanced in your stance to advance or retreat at a moment's notice. Like, have you seen their foils, how fast they are? They strike deadly. There's, you know, so fast. Just like the enemy is going to come after us, you have to be balanced and ready for the attacks of the enemy, but you have to be ready to advance into the attack. You know, one of the biggest strategies, it's like 98% of people who fence use this strategy. It's defending while advancing. See, they're there to block the foil away, but they're ready to attack through the block. Because you don't want to just keep block, and then not face the enemy. Because how long can you block for until you get hit? You have to advance at some point. And I think a lot of Christians miss that. I'm kind of jumping onto another point, but I don't want to jump around. Okay. Your health. See, the stance sets you up for longevity in the match. Do you know these Olympians? Do you know how long daily that they practice doing leg lifts and exercises just to strengthen? Has anyone ever tried like squatting or where you put your back against a wall and you just sit there? Like, you know, like it's easy, right? Like 4 hours, you can just 4 seconds. Nakia says, the devil. you gotta be ready. Cause your health is equivalent to the stance in regards to longevity in this life. Your health gives you longevity to carry out the mission and mantle that God has placed on your life. Longevity. The stance gives you longevity. If you're too low, it burns your quads so much that you're tired halfway through and the enemy can just steamroll you. Longevity. See, it enables you to press forward even when the enemy is attacking. And also helps you guard against the attacks. It's interesting. I was looking up articles on, you know, it's really hard to find articles on the internet about how to be healthy. Do you know it's like, I'm just joking around. What is it? 47 billion results on how to live a healthy life, and all of them pretty much say the same thing in different words. You know, on all these articles on how to stay physically healthy, they all match up of how to stay spiritually healthy. They're the same things. If you really boil it down to the root, hey guys, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to make everyone look at you right now. Everything, if you boil every single piece of advice, every Wikipedia article, every doctor article on how to stay physically healthy, it comes down to two things. If you take everything spiritually and say, what are the things that say spiritually healthy? It boils down to two things. And you know, I don't think it's a coincidence that they're the exact same two things. You ready for this? It's A, ready? Two ways to stay spiritually healthy and physically healthy. A, do what you're supposed to be doing. That's the first thing. Everything boils down to that. What does the doctor say when we walk in? Are you exercising? Yes. The slowest yes ever. I exercised when I was 12. Of course. Are you doing what you're supposed to be doing? See, look back in Nehemiah 6 when it first started. Even though the wall was finished, it wasn't completely done yet. Do you know everyone else saw that the wall was done, but Nehemiah knew it wasn't done because God hadn't said it was done yet? Right? And the interesting thing, if you keep reading Nehemiah, you find out that God doesn't see that the wall's done until you do certain things to finish it in his eyes. Just like in our lives, we might finish an aspect of our life and say, yeah, I'm good here, but does God say you're done? Or did you quit before your breakthrough? So many times it's easy to say, oh, I'm finished in this area, and then step down and realize, oh, I wasn't done cooking yet. Like, there is nothing worse. There is nothing worse than cooking like a birthday cake for someone and not checking if it's done yet. And you serve it to the kids and they're like, you know that like that taste that like, you know, there's like a moist, gooey flavor, but then there's like the step before that where you're just eating like baking soda and raw egg. Like, you know that flavor, that's like the spiritual doneness of a Christian if you think you're done before God gives you that check of you being done. Right? Do what you're supposed to be doing. See, in the eyes of God, the wall wasn't finished yet, even though everyone else started rejoicing, saying, we're done. Well, the doors aren't on yet. I wouldn't live in my house if I had no front door. Right? There's weird visitors at like 3 a.m. doing stuff in front of the outside. I'm not going to fall asleep with my door open. See, to keep healthy, you're supposed to exercise. You're supposed to do what you're supposed to be doing. To stay spiritually healthy, you're supposed to be doing what you're supposed to be doing. Right? If you don't understand those steps, please come join our discipleship. Do the one-on-one mentorship. I'd love to set you up for success. B, ready? All the physical things to stay healthy and all the spiritual things to stay healthy boil down to the second thing. There's only two. One is do what you're supposed to do. And two, ready? Don't do what you're not supposed to do. Or block certain things from getting inside of you. I like to just make this one a little bit easier. Block certain things from getting inside of you. Are you eating healthy? Yeah. I eat vegetables in the form of French fries deep fried. It's a veggie, right? Block certain things from getting inside of you. Like, how many times do you hear someone talk about dieting or not eating or eating right? You have to block certain things from consumption. So why am I bringing up this point? Because in Nehemiah, check this out. I love this. And I didn't give the verse to jump to, so John's going to have to jump around a little bit. So verse 2, it says, so Sanballat and Geshem sent a message asking me to meet them at one of the villages on the plain of Ono, but I realized they were plotting to harm me. He blocked that message from getting inside of him. Right? Has anyone ever said something to you and it just sits in like the pit of your stomach for days? Well, how do you stay spiritually healthy is you have to block some things out. Some people will say stuff and you need to take a moment and just say, God, Lord, have mercy on my mind right now. I need this to be blocked from my mental state, from my emotional state, from my health. And if you could practice that, it'd be a game changer. Bless you. Bless you again. I was wondering how many we're going to go for. Healthy. Have you ever... I think if we all can reflect, at one point in our lives, maybe we felt healthier than at another point. You know that feeling of just like, I can conquer the world. I can go on a hike. Sure, I can go out and do this. I can do this. I can do this. You know that feeling? It's just like that spiritual health. We can have those moments where we just feel spiritual health in our lives, and it boils down to blocking certain things from getting to us. Do what we're supposed to do, and don't do what we're supposed to do, and man, we can live a healthy life. Before moving on to the next point, I want to give a reference, because this location, oh no, it actually comes up multiple times in the rest of Nehemiah, and this is the first reference to it. And I want to give some foundation, because we're going to cover it next week and then in two more weeks. But the plain of oh no has a real interesting history. It's very interesting. There was a man from the tribe of Benjamin whose name was Ono, and he settled. This is where his family lived, and then it became basically the village of Ono. But this location, the interesting thing about this location is this was almost like a village where all the craftsmen who worked with steel and everyone that could blacksmith and everyone that could build weapons and sharpen all kinds of tools and everything lived here. So if you were going to get something worked on, you'd head over there and they would do it and then you'd go back. It was a village of people that could do specific kinds of crafts. And the name Oh No actually has a very specific meaning. It means power, wealth, and strength. It's that concept of if someone has more of one of those things, they could almost like lord it over you. Like an intimidation kind of thing. Like they try to do a power play and they're like, oh, I'm better at this than you. I'm this. And they try to discourage you by what they have and who they are. And it's very interesting that the enemy tries to pull Nehemiah to the land of power to do a power play over him. And it kind of goes a little bit deeper, because if you would recognize this location at this time, you would recognize years earlier, there's reason why there's villages of craftsmen living together. I don't know if you knew that. That's kind of bizarre, right? Like, why would that happen? We found out earlier that when God's chosen people moved into the land from Moses and then Joshua and they took over locations, the Philistines were upset about that, like they should be. I'd be upset if someone just moved into a bedroom and didn't tell me. They're like, oh, I'm moving in because I can. You know, it's like, what? And all of a sudden, the Philistines got clever and said, you know what? We're going to go in and kill everyone that knows how to work with metal. All the blacksmiths we're going to get rid of so that they will have to travel to us to get anything sharpened and worked on. We'll own the only blacksmiths in the land. They created a monopoly in this land. You can find this in this verse, 1 Samuel chapter 13, verse 19 through 20. It says, now there was no blacksmith to be found throughout the land of Israel, for the Philistines said, let the Hebrews make themselves lest the Hebrews make themselves swords or spears. But every one of the Israelites went down to the Philistines to sharpen his plowshare, his mattock, his axe, or his sickle. The enemy tried to force their power over God's people and cause them to go to them. I know it's kind of like back and forth. The bad guys try to force the good guys to only come to them for their needs rather than going to God for their needs. And because of that, the enemy obtained the power and authority over God's people. So why am I bringing this up in this point? The enemy is trying to get Nehemiah to come into their power. The enemy wants to hold power over you. See, by caving in, you lose your power and authority to the enemy. Grasp this. Your health as a Christian and your health in your body all depend on this. Don't give the enemy what God has gifted you, which is authority and power Don't turn it over. See, I'm kind of giving an illustrative and lofty example because I don't want to hurt people's feelings by diving straight into it, but I wanted to set it up for this. God has given you authority and power over this earth by walking in his ways. So you have authority, you have power. And by caving in and going to what the enemy has in store for you rather than what God has in store for you, you shortchange your life. By saying, man, you know what? I'm not finding comfort in this community of this, or I'm not finding what I feel like I should be finding, so I'm going to go over here and try to do it this way on my own. Well, you forfeit your right to authority and power that God has for you because he's working and trying to refine you here rather than trying to allow the enemy to refine you. It's kind of open-ended because we all deal with this in our lives of saying, am I going to wait on God for that wonderful steak that takes 2 days to prepare? It's long. It's tiresome. Or am I going to go to McDonald's and try to get it right now? There's a different taste, right? Do you know what I'm talking about? The difference between Morton's and McDonald's? Morton's is a fancy steakhouse. You're going to drop like over 100 for one person. Difference between preparation and time and health and waiting it out is drastically different than caving into the enemy for a supersized meal right now. You might feel full on both, but one does drastically different effects to your body. Spiritually, same thing. All right, jumping to point number two, Nehemiah chapter 6, verse 4, continuing on. Four times they sent the same message, and each time I gave the same reply. You'd think they'd get the hint, right? Four times. Well, let's read about the fifth time in verse 5. The fifth time, Sanballat's servant came with an open letter in his hand. Excuse me. And this is what it said. There is a rumor among the surrounding nations, and Geshem tells me it is true, that you and the Jews are planning to rebel, and that this is why you're building the wall. According to reports, you plan to be their king. He also reports that you have appointed prophets in Jerusalem to proclaim about you, look, there is a king in Judah. You can be very sure that this report will get back to the king, so I suggest that you come and talk it over with me. I replied, there is no truth in any part of your story. You are making up the whole thing. Verse 9, they were just trying to intimidate us, imagining that they could discourage us and stop the work. So I continued the work with even greater determination. Point number two is your mind. Your mind. In fencing, the mind represents the foil. The foil. See, when you fence, you have to have a proper stance first. Right? I watched some classes on beginning fencing, and they say, before you touch the foil, you need to get your stance down. And then you just stand there. Like, no, your foot, it needs to move a millimeter out. Oh, this, you need to work on this. You know, but then you get the foil. The next step is the foil. See, the foil attacks and defends. Blocks and attacks. Just like your mind. Just like your mind with the enemy. What do you need to block and what do you need to attack? Has anyone ever watched Captain America? Does anyone know who Captain America is? Okay, thanks. Captain America, what is his defense? What is his attacking thing? Pistol shield. Thanks. Shield. And sometimes a fist and a pistol. His main form of attack is a shield. That's his go-to. His main form of defense is a shield. Right? It's defend, then attack. Attack, defend. It's just like your mind. You need to determine, are you in a defensive moment that you need to stand back and block? Or is this the moment to advance? Because if you just keep blocking, It'll wear you down. There's in churches, one of, and I'm not trying to bring guilt or condemnation onto anyone right now at all. That is not my heart. My heart is to give you the tools that God wants you to have to advance his kingdom. One of, not one of the worst, but one of the bad things you can do in a church is if you get real frustrated in an area, and maybe it's an area you shouldn't be serving, and maybe there's another area, but to step back and not advance in another area. It's a step back and then just get lost in the crowd. And then eventually from lost in the crowd to, I can podcast now. And then from podcasting to nothing. So you need to recognize, I need to defend here, but I need to advance here. It's not about backing up, because you'll eventually run out of room to back up too. And the enemy goes, one more step, you're out, or one more poke and you're out. You need to advance whenever you defend. All right, finding characteristics out of this from verse 4 to verse 9 in the mind or the foil, attacking and defending. Nehemiah points out three things I found in the verses to work on your mind. In guarding your mind, Nehemiah does three things. First one, A, repetition. Repetition. We wouldn't have a number of letters sent to Nehemiah if he didn't have the same response every time, right? Every time, same response. Repetition. Guarding your mind involves repetition. When the enemy tries to get you to compromise, the repetition will ground you into that. Remember, practice makes permanent. Practice makes, not perfect, permanent. By practicing the things of the Lord, it will set you up for success in guarding your mind. Yeah, the enemy, I don't know how it works, but you know, it's like your weakest aspect of your life or your spiritual walk, it seems like the enemy likes to chip away at that the most, right? Like, it doesn't attack things that you're good at, ever. And you're like, man, I got this in the bag. That's not how it works, usually. And I was thinking about this. Have you ever played Jenga? Yeah. If you don't know what it is, it's a bunch of sticks stacked up, like little blocks, and you poke one out, and if you get it out, you put it on top, right? I don't know how my 5-year-old daughter is better at Jenga than I am. It blows my mind every time when she'll get it like stacked up so high and she'll like poke things and it's like, whoop, but it always comes back. And I'm like, how are you doing this? And then Ollie's like, ha, ha, ha. It always ends with Ollie. But it's that testing and prodding that the enemy does. The secure blocks, he goes, no, that's too stuck in there. Let me find a weaker one and balance this on top and dangle it on your mind, right? But take something from the middle of your life that you don't really see and put it on the top, just like Jenga. Take something from something that you're not really watching and all of a sudden it goes to your mind and you start retreating in life. Verse 4 again, 4 times they sent the same message and each time I gave the same reply. Repetition and aspects of your life that are hard and wearing you down. Repetition. 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 Just for one more time. Pastor humor. B. The second thing Nehemiah does to strengthen the mind and guard the mind, being on guard, is truth. 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 One of your greatest strengths you can ever do with your mind is to identify the truth. Not the convenient truth, the truth. We can all find, if you look hard enough and long enough, you'll eventually find someone to agree with you, no matter how ridiculous that truth is. I'm doing air quotes for all the podcast listeners. if you look hard enough, you will find a truth. It might not be the truth, but you'll find something. How to guard his mind? In verse 8, we find it here. I replied, there is no truth in any part of your story. You are making up the whole thing. Guard your mind by finding the truth. Finding the truth. All right, and see, on guard, how to guard your mind? Find it in Nehemiah verse 9. C is determination. Determination. Verse 9 says, they were just trying to intimidate us, imagining what they could discourage us and stop the work. So I continued the work with even greater determination. Determination. So when your mind gets weary, oftentimes it's because you're intimidated by something or someone, or you're just discouraged because you feel like it'll never happen. Like, ugh, will this happen ever? Determination. See, Nehemiah, we find out later, has, from the first hammer blow to the last hammer blow in physical construction of the building, not or the wall, not when God says it's done, but when the last hammer hit, was 52 days. 52 days. I worked it out. It would have been August 11th to October 2nd. 52 days. It's interesting that our sermon series is going to envelop the time frame. Determination. See, your determination combats intimidation and discouragement. The enemy wants you to lose your determination because intimidation and discouragement will try and win out. Guard your mind by being determined in what you're doing. Excuse me. All right. Continuing with the last section, the last third of this chapter in verse 10. Later I went to visit Shemaiah, son of Deliah, and grandson of Mehetabel. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, but I'm going to go with it. Who was confined to his home. He said, let us meet together inside the temple of God and bolt the door shut. Your enemies are coming to kill you tonight. But I replied, should someone in my position run from danger? Should someone in my position enter the temple to save his life? No, I wouldn't do that. I realized that God had not spoken to him. Remember, this is the whole truth thing with the mind. But that he had uttered this prophecy against me because Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. Just a pause real quick. That is scary business when someone says, thus saith the Lord, with money in their back pocket. Leadership-wise, be weary when money is your influencer over God. Just throwing that out if you're a leader in something. Verse 13, they were hoping to intimidate me and make me sin. Then they would be able to accuse and discredit me. Verse 14, continue on. Remember, oh my God, all the evil things that Tobiah and Sanballat have done. And remember Noadiah, the prophet, and all the prophets like her who have tried to intimidate me. The builders complete the wall. In verse 15, so on October 2nd, the wall was finished, just 52 days after we had begun. When our enemies and the surrounding nations heard of it, they were frightened and humiliated. I'll bet they were humiliated. They realized this work had been done with the help of our God. During those 52 days, many letters went back and forth between Tobiah and the nobles of Judah, for many in Judah had sworn allegiance to him because his father-in-law was Shechaniah, son of Ara, and his son, Jehonoah, was married to the daughter of Meshullam, son of Berechiah. They kept telling about Tobiah's good deeds, and then they told him everything I said. And Tobiah kept sending threatening letters to intimidate me. Point number three, heart. Heart. This is in representation of the torso in fencing. Your heart. Your heart. See, in fencing, when the enemy hits your torso and knocks you out a point, those points stack up until you lose, you're out of the game. So many hits to your heart will knock you out. Your heart is critical. Not a critical heart, but it's critical to guard from becoming a critical heart. Guard it at all costs. So how do you stay on guard, guarding over your heart? That's such a weird thing to think about, right? Physically, you can't just wear a bulletproof vest every day and realize the enemy's going to not spiritually attack you anymore. Or that's you, there's no bulletproof vest that's made that way, right? There's different grades of bulletproof level, and the Chris, what is the clay ones that are the top tier? The ceramic ones. You have to have a certain bulletproof vest over your heart. And Chris had been explaining to me at a gun show once that different levels of bulletproof vests will last so long. Some will hold out a full weapon attack and you're good, and some will hold out one shot, and the next one, you better start running. Or get shot somewhere else. So your heart. Are you prepared to guard your heart for one thing and one thing only? Or are you prepared to daily step up and say, God, I need my heart guarded? Well, Nehemiah does three things to guard his heart, to stay on guard. First thing is, he listens. You know when the best advantages and tools that Nehemiah holds at his disposal is? It was his discerning ears. His ears. Verse 12. See, he's sitting in a prophet's house, a man of God, and he says, you should do this, because he got paid to tell him that. And Nehemiah is sitting there, and he had been listening to this man before who was a prophet, or I read woman earlier. Anyways, he listens to this name, non-gender specific name, and gives him a word from God, apparently, but was really bought. Verse 12, it says, I realized that God had not spoken to him. It's a him, okay. And that he uttered this prophecy against me because Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. See, it's not good enough. It's not good enough. And this is probably the worst thing for a pastor to ever say. It's not good enough to just listen to the words that I speak on Sunday. It's not good enough. Because you won't be able to discern from yourself when it's God speaking to you or the enemy speaking to you. It's not good enough. You need to listen to God yourself. See, everyone else is going to this prophet to hear words from God, but Nehemiah spent time listening to God so he could discern if it was from God or from someone's pocket change that had been bought out. Listening to God will protect your heart. Often the most intense situations will cause you to make a decision, and so many people base it off of their heart rather than off of what God says. Do you know that so many people make decisions of their heart rather than hearing God? See, your goal is to guard your heart, not use it as a decision maker. Well, my gut is telling me to do this. Is it your gut or is it God? Okay? I am convinced as a pastor, as a human being, as a person who just loves the Word of God, there are times when we lead by our gut just because we feel right about it, and we avoid seeking after God. Man, next time you have a decision, really consider, is it my gut or is it God? And oftentimes, God will speak to you, and I don't deny that. And it will just be this instinct you're going after because he's trying to protect you in that moment. But you need to identify if it's God speaking to you or the pepperoni pizza you ate at lunch and you just feel weird about something. Is it God or is it your gut? I might be wrong on this, but I'm willing to stake this word. I have never read anywhere in the Bible where God calls us to live on impulse and snap decisions based on what we feel at the moment over his word. I haven't read it yet. I'm not denying it's in there, but I haven't found it yet. I've read through the Bible a few times. Live by what you hear from God. So verse 13, it says this: they were hoping to intimidate me and make me sin. Then they would be able to accuse and discredit me. Do you understand what's going on here? They paid this man of God, who respected money more than God, to convince Nehemiah to run into the temple and bar the doors and lock himself in so that they could catch him doing something and then write a letter to the king and say, listen, this guy you sent out here, he just locked himself in the temple. He's not doing what he's supposed to be doing. He's wasting money. And all of a sudden, Nehemiah says, no, something's not checking out right. God wouldn't tell me to do this. And then, lessons from Nehemiah. Remember, they were hoping to intimidate me and make me sin. They were hoping to intimidate. If he didn't listen to God, he would have been intimidated and he would have fallen into sin. See, a lack of listening, we can feel intimidated and we can fall into sin when we aren't hearing the voice of God. Again, another plug for the discipleship of our church. If you want one-on-one discipleship, I would love to speak to you and say, here's how you listen to God. Give you those tools. All right, and B. A was listening. B, the second thing Nehemiah did to guard his heart was remind. It was a memory. It was a remembering. Verse 14, remember, O my God, all the evil things that Tobiah and Sanballat have done, and remember Noadiah the prophet and all the prophets like her who have tried to intimidate me. See, when we're guarding our heart from the enemy, it's not just about backing up and backing up and backing up into a corner. It's also about remembering what God has said. I'm doing this for a reason. I can't give up because I'm tired. I can't give up because I'm weary. It's about remembering. So your ability to remember what God originally spoke to you is a major key to guarding your heart. So I promise you. Do you know how many youth students and children go through camps every year in our district, the Four Square camps? A lot. Hundreds. It's not like four. It's hundreds of kids go through. Hundreds of students go through. Do you know the percentage of students that get called to full-time ministry and missions? It's a lot. It's a large percentage. Do you know the percentage that forget that promise when they're of age to follow through with that promise? It's because they didn't guard their heart with remembering what God had called them to do. It's true. You know, this is one of the worst statistics a pastor can read of discouragement is we have a Bible college, a Life Pacific College. It's in this area. It's an accredited college where young people can go, be trained, and get a degree and learn how to pastor. You can get licensed. You can get ordained after so much time. And it's a training area. Do you know how many students start at Life Pacific College and then complete their schooling? It's not a one for one. It's not even a one for two. It's oftentimes a one for three or one for four. Because at some point, they forget what God had spoken to them about. They're not being reminded weekly, this is why I'm doing it. Being sharpened by God at such an intense level, it's tiring. I mean, just think, if you were a sword being sharpened on the grinding sword, how long are you going to endure that pressure that that blacksmith is forcing upon that millstone, grinding it down. It's uncomfortable. It's painful. I don't like that. I don't like that discipleship. That guess what? That sharpens you. So you can defend and you can attack. See, a dull sword doesn't really do much against the enemy. It doesn't do too much. So that was B. C. This is the interesting thing. At first, it's kind of irony, but I almost didn't have C in there. But I didn't feel right about closing off the message on remind. And I kept feeling like there's one more thing to grasp, one more thing to glean, one more thing to get out of guarding our heart. And it's interesting because it's so subtle. I'm not going to give the point. Oh, it's probably already up there. Yeah, credit. C, credit, credit. Write it down. It's already up there. Verse 16b. They realized this work had been done with the help of our God. You know how to protect your heart? Give credit to God. See, when something comes through, praise Him. When something good happens, praise Him. Keep your mind focused and your heart on God. It's about giving credit to God for what He's done. Right? Because if you don't give credit to God, you start removing Him out of the equation, and all of a sudden you start having your heart, oh, I can do this. I can do this. And the enemy's just sitting back laughing. Yes, you can. Yes, you can back up. Yes, you can quit. But when you give credit to God, all of a sudden your attack position starts moving forward. You know, God was my coach. God was my trainer. My name is Emilio, whatever. How does Princess Raya, what's that? My name is Emilio Bentoy. Bendigo. You give credit where credit's due. So many of you are going to go to lunch and that's going to be the thing from the message you got. Give credit. Know who your coach was. Know who trained you. And don't give up. I love this story of Nehemiah. Reclaiming the walls around the worship. It's so relatable to us today. Written thousands of years ago. Guarding the worship of God. I want to enter. I know we're a little bit time-wise. I just really feel pressed by God that we need to enter into a time of worship. Karen, can the team come on up? Let's all stand up. Let's worship God, and we'll continue our worship.